this is Kevin Dixon, and a big welcome to A Talk on the Buyer Side. I'm your host, and I'm also the founder of PoxStep, a sales platform that aligns the selling with the buying. We're a sales podcast with a difference, because this is all about the buyers, and in today's complex markets, it's their perspectives that really matter. We'll be having buyer-side chats with decision makers and industry experts to understand more about buying challenges, what salespeople do well, what they need to improve on, and how they can help in the buying process. Join us as we explore the concept of facilitation and collaboration with B2B buyers. Adam, welcome to A Talk on the Buyer Side.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Right. So if I was going to send out an advance notice of this and it was going to say I'm going to have a guest from Newcastle, I think a lot of the people abroad will be worried that we need subtitles. But I am delighted to say that your English is very understandable.
Yeah. I mean, you might disagree with everything I say, but you should be able to make out what I say. I
think yes, exactly. Difference. Because there is a big gulf in the way we speak between the North and the South. But yes, you're very understandable. So now, you and I have been chatting for a while and we've become a bit football buddies and life buddies and various other things. But the primary reason of that relationship evolving is I was drawn to the fact that you had this incredibly interesting title. Buyer Enablement Director. This is not something we see very often. And so when I start to see it, I'm like, ooh, I want to know more. Tell me a little bit about how this came about and put some context on it by saying who you work for, so how this all comes together.
Yeah, so the first thing, before I say that, I will say a title's only any good if you do something with it. And that's a great example of why we come on this podcast, to explain why we've made this change and why this role's come about. So, yep, I'm Adam Freeman. So I'm Sales and Buyer Enablement Director at the Access Group. We're a UK-based, UK-headquartered software company. And we've got presence in Asia Pacific and around the world now. One of the fastest tech growing companies around. If anyone looks us up, if you're not familiar with us, we're one of the tech's best kept secrets in terms of where we're coming from. And we're growing at a phenomenal rate. With that brings unique challenges. And what I think we're very good at Access at doing is been very agile. We're very adaptable. We're not too set in our ways and we're quite innovative as a company. And so I've always been a huge advocate for pre-sales, and I'll explain more about how I've kind of structured the team around the title in a moment. But I've always been a huge pre-sales advocate, and people who are listening to this that maybe have followed me on LinkedIn previously will know me from a pre-sales professional world. I've been very vocal in that community, huge advocate for the community, and a big advocate for the digitization of the pre-sales community. So moving away from the demo, all been about the demo, you know, and that connection of someone says, pre-sales, what's that? Oh, yeah, it's a demo. We need to break that connection. And I've been a huge advocate for doing so. And kind of as part of that journey, I kind of discovered buyer enablement and instantly I had the penny drop moment. It was just, that is absolutely the future. I could see it. I bought software. I've bought tech. And I always thought, well, the best experiences I had of buying tech were where probably knowingly or unknowingly, I'd almost experienced that buyer enablement. It allowed me to make decisions. I felt empowered. I felt like I was putting my name against something that I could believe in. And so as a buyer, I enjoyed buying that way. So I thought, well, our customers are going to enjoy buying that way. So hence the move towards buyer enablement. But what we did have to do at Access was we had to kind of make it work for us and our customers and how we sell and how the company's structured. So how we've kind of organized ourselves behind the scenes is I still head up the pre-sales team. So our buyer enablement function, is built up of our bid team. So anyone that responds to bids, tenders, anyone in that sphere. Our pre-sales team, so anyone doing the demos, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. Okay, and our sales academy as well. So the idea being that if we elevate the sales enablement side and elevate our salesperson's abilities, and we elevate the buyer's experience and empower them, we should just have a better quality conversation. So we're taking buyer enablement on a slant, in a way, but it works for us. Really works for us. It's helping us scale. It's helping us grow. And it's helping us kind of give our customers the experience that I think they need in this post-pandemic world.
You haven't got a small sales team either, have you?
No. So we're, what, about 750 quota carrying, give or take?
So this is not saying trying to organize something for, you know, a dozen, 20, 30, 40. This is
big organization that's growing at an exponential rate.
Yeah.
That in itself brings a lot of problems, because the more you grow, the more expectations there are for it to continue with success. And so you're sort of, I suppose, pivoting the way you're looking at these things. Because so how did it come about that you took the title? Was the title really trying to reflect what you were trying to do in the organization? Because, you know, you've got a title and most people go, well, what is that? What does that mean?
Yeah, but they used to say that when I had a title of pre-sales leader, right? Like, nobody really knew what pre-sales was. So it was kind of...
It's been around a long time, pre-sales.
It has. And I think it's got connotations of, in some areas, it's got connotations of carrying a salesperson's projector, you know, and...
It's a supporting... See, that's the thing. That's the interesting thing. I come from that background where, you know, I was frontline sales. We were the sort of primary element engaging with the customer, and we bring pre-sales in at the right time to do the right things and probably add intelligence. But now, if you think about what you're doing now with the organization, is you're almost parallel. You're not a supporting function just from behind. You're supporting right at the front end as well.
Yeah, and it's like, you've got to think like customer. I mean, I know you hate the term as much as that, look, the buying journey, right? I'm going to say it up front, right? I know that it's going to wind you up, but think of the customer experience, think of how that buyer moves from A to B. They've done 60-80% of the legwork before they speak to you now. It's not like the old world where the availability of information, we're in an always on world. And I think sometimes as sales, we forget that, you know, we're kind of, our availability to sell and our hours of selling are typically when our prospects and our customers are busy doing the day job that pays for the software that they're trying to buy from us, right? So we've got to have an always-on ability to surface the needs of how a buyer needs to buy. I think that's the difference of a really good pre-sales team and the move in a pre-sales team, which is where we move towards buyer enablement. We start to look at, well, how can we always be on? How can, if I'm busy, and you think about scaling, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, right? As we grew, really, really good quality pre-sales people are hard to find. There's a huge shortage of very good pre-sales people. We had to adapt. We had to think differently. We had to get more digital. The upside of that came with an always-on ability, right? But the ability to put information out there, to share information, to understand how it's landing without being present is key. And that's how we've scaled. We haven't had to have the headcount to support the growth of the company. I think that, for me, proves the move towards buyer enablement.
Yeah, I think using the term buyer enablement as well changes the mindset.
Yeah.
Because I think as soon as you use the term sales enablement, by the way, we're not saying buyer enablement over sales enablement.
No, alongside it.
Buyer enablement is that buyer first mentality.
Yeah.
How do we walk a mile in their shoes, understand what they're trying to achieve and things like that? Trying to change salespeople, sales organizations is extremely challenging. Because, you know, I say it so many times, salespeople sell change, but are the most reluctant to change themselves.
Mm.
The way they do things, the way they've always done things, the way they think, act, execute. What sort of challenges have you found? And how's your sales organization embraced what you guys are doing?
I'm brutally honest. I probably haven't faced the challenges a lot of people would have had. I think as an organization, like I said, we're very, very agile. Our mindset isn't fixed. And I know that gets thrown around a lot. We're quite happy to try stuff and experiment at scale.
We're a young company in real terms as well.
In theory, yeah. I mean, we've been around 30 years this year, but our kind of exponential growth journey has really been the last 10 years. I mean, I started 10 years ago, gone December, and there was a few hundred employees. You know, we'll be into the many thousands now. So I've seen a lot of change and I've kind of grown with the change and I've seen what's worked and maybe what worked to a lesser extent. But I also think when I talk to the salespeople, they know that I've pretty much done every job in Access. You know, I've been a customer before I came to Access as well. So I've been in every role. And I often think when you're trying to drive this kind of change, sometimes you just got to be accepting that some people do it at a different pace. You know, it's okay to be a bit worried about this change. It's okay to not be on board with it, but it's also okay to really want to charge ahead and be an innovator. And I think what you've got to do with salespeople is let them be whatever they want to be. But you've got to kind of say, listen, just try it, just lean in. So we have this phrase like lean in, just give it a go. And often what's happened then is once people have tried it and gone outside of their comfort zone, just, you know, put the toe outside the tent, right? Once they've done that, they often don't go back. I mean, we've had fantastic adoption. We've given them some amazing tools to work with. And I will say, we have a very, very good relationship between sales, our revenue ops function, which is really where this function sits, and our marketing teams. All three of those functions are very, very tightly aligned. And we have really good leadership as well, I would say that, that help drive this change.
Yeah, I think one of the things I found interesting in our conversations before is that a lot of the times over the many years I've worked in sales, there's almost an element of a sort of a us and them scenario.
Yeah.
Sometimes sales feel like they're this little element that is detached from the rest of the business, and they're the only ones really interested in trying to push things forwards. The sense I get from our conversations, you're extremely complimentary about your sales team. Oh, if there's any of your team, if any of your team listening, Adam loves you.
Oh, honestly, I think it's just the hardest, one of the hardest jobs in the world, you know, and I think you live and kind of learn in public, you know, you've got a published number there that everyone can see with modern CRM platforms. And you, if you have a bad month, it's there for everyone to see. And I've always said sales is an incredibly hard job, and ultimately it keeps everyone in jobs. If you stop selling, okay, where are we paying the bills? Our salespeople and how we power them and enable them to be their best selves is absolutely critical to the success of this company. And I think having that mutual respect, I don't see that in every organization. I fully agree with you. You know, and there has to be a mutual respect, and vice versa. They know that our motivations of the supporting teams of RevOps and the area that I sit, we're just trying to help. We're just trying to make the world easier. And if it works, let's do more of it. And if it doesn't, let's do less of it, right?
Now, if I look at when you start to do a big change, it's not to solve a problem. It's like how it worked with you guys. You didn't really see, oh, we've got a problem, so we need to make a change, so we'll focus on buyer enablement. This was really you sort of being ahead of the curve a little bit and saying, I'm seeing how things are changing. Now will be a great time to start an evolution, to start to say, how can we continue to improve? What can we do as a team to support the continued growth of the organization? I think a lot of people might go, oh, we need to do some things in our sales organization because we've got problems X, Y, Z. You don't have to wait till there's a problem to make changes and make improvements. So can you give us some, or can you share some examples of sort of some of the primary things that you think that you've done under the umbrella of buyer enablement, which I think can be interpreted differently by different people. But as long as it's buyer first, then that's fine. Can you share any examples of some of the sort of things that you've done that your sales teams are now executing upon?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had a couple of really successful things, particularly around use of video outreach and video platforms, kind of trying to give people information in different ways. I think that's landed very well. And kind of packaging it up as well to give our salespeople, not just, I mean, you talk about, like we said here, the differential between sales and buyer enablement. They have to coexist. That's one of the things we've done really well. So we launched a new accreditation scheme. So anyone that follows Access on LinkedIn and people there will have seen people sharing the fact they're accredited. We raised the bar of what we expect. You know, someone who wears our polo shirt, it's not just a name on a polo shirt. Okay. It's an identity. It's how we serve, you know, our community, our partners, our whoever. And so the reputation that goes, we want to be the best in the business. And if we're not, we want to be very, very close to that. So we use an accreditation scheme to kind of empower this change as well, of educating the why, not just say, please go and do this, but take people on a journey of why we're doing it. So when you say about things we've done that have helped this move, I would say that was one of the key things we've done. We let people make their own decision at pace. And then we said, hang on, listen, it's clearly working. We're getting great results, right? Okay, we need everyone to be working, you know, and getting on board with this to a extent. I mean, we've all seen the stats about how little time there is. Everyone's short-staffed, whole world's short-staffed, you know. And the amount of time we have with an individual customer to make an impact is marginal. What did Gartner say? It's what, 6% of the buying committee time with any one vendor now?
Today, 17% of the buying journey is spent with vendors.
Yeah.
So it's how many vendors are in the
industry. And I think that's growing. I don't know if you'd agree, Kevin, but I think...
Oh. People are discovering more options to engage now. So we've all got more competition.
Yeah. And we've got, you know, we look at how we're working. We're not traveling as much. You know, we've got the gift of time back for a lot of cases. A lot of senior buyers on the buyer side have got more time to look at the market. You know, they've got an abundance of information because whether people realize it or not, they kind of are starting a buyer enablement journey, most companies, because they're putting more readily ungated content on their website. Do you know what? That's a step towards buyer enablement, right? You're educating the buyer. So
the Access Group, you're in a, it's no way of getting out of it. It's a highly competitive market.
Yeah.
You've got a great set of products, but product differentiation, as we all know, seriously difficult. Seriously difficult, because guess what? Whether you've got a superior product or not, vendors are always saying they're the biggest, the best, the fastest, most reliable, most economical, whatever it might be. So from the buyer's perspective, it's really difficult. So it sounds to me what you're talking about with your academy, your accreditation, what you're trying to do with things like that, you're focused on the buying experience. And the buying experience is at the core of buyer enablement, because Gartner actually said that, I think it was 62% of buyers would prioritize doing business with a company that differentiated the buying experience. So how easy are you to buy from? And that isn't just about the one-on-one engagements with salespeople. It's about all of the different capabilities around it, the online, the digital first, whatever it might be. Mm. Is that something you're seeing? Is that something you consciously focus on, is the buying experience?
Yeah, and I think the other thing I think is it's understanding how fast a customer wants to move. I mean, we've spoken previously about this. Of if you think back in the day when there was a large enterprise deal, that could be years in the making of a decision. Well, whoever sat down and said it had to be years? You know, whoever made the rule and the expectation that a certain deal of a certain size should take a certain amount of time? And I think that's one of the places where a lot of software companies get it wrong. You know, they kind of almost set an expectation on the buyer of, well, this is our process, and we'll put our process onto you. And we've got to remember that we have certain gates in a sales process to capture certain data points to work out, you know, is the machine getting fed, right? I get it. We've got to think a buyer doesn't have those gates. Mm. They don't have those same breaks in velocity that we would have. And I think what we've got to get cuter as an industry is understanding when those gates apply and when they don't. I mean, we've brought in certain gates around, is content consumed before we really put a lot of human effort in? Because I think one of the things we've noticed is, let's say video content is readily used. Well, why are we then going repeating that? What value is that adding to do that same demonstration in person? Now, if it adds value and that's what the buyer wants, fine, absolutely fine. But if someone's not engaging with that, but then still wants a face-to-face meeting, is that because that person there, that stakeholder wants that? Do the other stakeholders want that? You know, are we using their time up when they don't want it? And having that conversation up front of, is it the right time right now? I mean, I do think one of the things the pandemic's done is not just, you mentioned about competition differentiation. I would say it's wider than that now. I would say you've got competition within individual decisions that need to be made. And what I mean by that is, if I'm running a factory, it's not just, do I use supplier A or supplier B? Do I buy a machine or do I even do that project? Mm. And you go back to probably the late 2008, when we had the credit issue in the UK, we were in a similar mindset then. I think part of it, we're a little bit back there now. And I think that we have to justify the whole project, let alone that we're the right vendor.
Mm.
Don't know if you'd agree.
No, definitely. I think there's lots of reasons why it's a lot more complicated now than it is in the past. Mm. I think at the same time, the information available to salespeople, the tools available to salespeople, the way the organizations support salespeople are far more superior than they used to be in the past. Mm. So sort of balancing. But you sort of touched on one of those sweet spots for me, which is the stakeholder management.
Mm.
The fact that you know, there are a broad set of stakeholders now, and it's rarely possible to get a decision of anything of any significance from a single person or a couple of people. Now, I know you guys have some borderline transactional deals that can be done really quickly, small size, very SME organization, and that's never going to change. But when you're starting to do the larger mid-size organizations, or even some of the deals you've been done in enterprise, you know that the number of people that you're having to engage with, identify and engage with, is pretty significant. Now, they're all buyers.
Mm.
They all need to be enabled in their decision-making process.
Yeah.
Have you guys started to address that, or have you got any thoughts on that, or have you got anything you've done that you think is proven to be particularly effective?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's quite a unique challenge, actually, because of the breadth of applications that we will support. So you think we've got 11 divisions ranging from health and social care, hospitality, you know, people and learning, you name it, we can do it. And so where a lot of our deals get quite complex, is when it'll be, okay, well, I want to take financials and I want to take this medication management piece of software. Oh, and I want to take your EPOS. And we've got a fundraising arm to the business as well, so we'll take that. And we also do food, so actually we'll take your procurement management stuff as well. And suddenly you've got these 5-6 different functional areas looking at a big change program. Yeah, and you've got not just selling a financial solution, you're selling all the bits around the edge. And it's this idea that for a customer, 1 + 1 = 3. It's the natural uplift of having all that data kind of centralized and accessible. And so where we get into complexities and where we differentiate is that, well, we can understand that stakeholder map far better because we've got that kind of, we've helicoptered up view. So another business that's maybe just competing to supply the healthcare side of things, are they necessarily going to be in contact with the FD as strongly as we are? Maybe, maybe not. So
I agree with you. There's some upside. You get the broader view, but also there's also complications because if you think about all those different pieces of the jigsaw that the Access Group can provide, there's probably going to be stakeholders responsible for that. There's going to be users that will have influence in that.
Yeah.
So suddenly the number of people that you need to get aligned to achieve consensus becomes much bigger. I can see probably why sometimes that these deals become a lot more protracted because trying to get all your ducks in a row and those sort of deals becomes more complicated. So have you got to the stage yet where, because I know you're moving more and more into these sort of bigger deals because the bigger ticket deals add great values in an organization. You know, we'd all love to get lots more of the bigger deals, but we know they're really difficult to win for various reasons. But so going back to sort of buyer enablement, the real core of it originally came from providing the right content to the right people at the right time for the right job or task at hand. You know, I think it's much bigger than that. Have you sort of got down to the sort of granularity yet of sort of buyer persona based content or part of the buying journey content?
Yeah.
God, I can't believe I just said buying journey, but you made me do it.
You did. You said it.
Yeah, well, I like doing that. I'm editing that out, mate. There's no way I'm leaving that.
You need a little buzzer on your desk that when
I
you
will,
say it.
I will just put a buying process over that or buying decision. But you know, have you started to sort of build that? Because going back to this relationship, there's a huge dependency on now on marketing to provide valuable insights around, and insights isn't just a white paper or video.
No.
Sorts of different things. You know, are you gearing up for that yet, or have you started to gear up for that yet?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so we have key personas mapped out by function, by functional area. So, you know, we know what that kind of persona typically wants. We also understand maybe the emotional ROI on those kind of decisions. I think that's a lot of software companies forget that, you know, that whoever your champion is, whoever's backing you in this decision, your key stakeholders, they're putting their name, their reputation on the line backing you. You know, and if you get that wrong and the deal's big enough, that's a career, you know, impacting event. And we have to take that very, very seriously that, you know, if we aren't the right vendor, we should be walking away. You know, we should be potentially helping them make the right decision for them as much as anything else. Some of the deals I've been involved in recently and kind of spoken to, it's people are now asking us, you know, Adam, have we got the right skill sets in the business to bring this change in? Their understanding of what it takes to bring about change is so much more elevated than it used to be. I would say that for sure. I think people's perception of what problems are impacting the most are definitely different post-COVID. I think you've got such desperate, you've got teams that are, you could argue technologically, they're trying to be more connected than they've ever been, but physically they're less connected than they've ever been. And that brings a whole new challenge of how they come to a consensus and an agreement. It's very difficult. Sometimes you have to almost be the middleman and the moderator and bring them together themselves, because as software vendors, we've worked remotely, most of us, our entire careers. It's nothing new to us how we're working, right? The only difference is we couldn't go to the pub after work and we couldn't, you know, do whatever we wanted to after work, couldn't go watch the football. But in all seriousness, a lot of the organizations we're working with, they used to be in an office, in a desk, making decisions. So the importance for us to provide content not only in the format they need it, but at a time they need it, which focuses on their key concerns and this is what you need to do to move on to the next stage for that persona is critical. And if you don't differentiate, if it's a one size fits all, here's your demo, right? We've spoken previously about, you know, video content. Putting a video out there does nothing unless it's tailored, unless it addresses the need, unless it's very clearly targeted.
Who wrote that content?
So the pre-sales team, typically. So it was a very...
By marketing, or was it purely the pre-sales team?
So it was a mix. A lot of the top of the funnel content will come from marketing. They're experts in that. I keep going back to this. You know, they're very, very good at understanding what the market wants. Globally, they see more trends because they're obviously analysing Google and they're analysing search words. They understand they're at pace.
Yeah, but marketing, in my view, is more about brand and creating marketing qualified leads. Whereas I think when you get down to maybe your pre-sales guys, and that term is misleading because their roles now are far bigger. But if you think about buyer enablement content, it's about helping each buyer overcome inaction and indecision to progress forward in their buying process. I don't think marketing can really do that because they're not in the trenches like your pre-sales are, because your pre-sales guys are having conversations with customers day in, day out. They can see what's helping. They can see the bottlenecks and the hurdles, etc. So it sounds to me like your pre-sales people, their capabilities are much broader than, because if I look back, pre-sales to me was the technology geeks that know all the answers about how stuff works, how it plumbs in, how it connects and executes. But now it's about how and why that would help an individual buyer. Yeah.
It's a completely different skill set. If I go back even 2-3 years, just pre-pandemic, we were starting to see change then. If I think back, I think the pandemic accelerated that change. What I would say on our marketing, because they're the B2B marketing team of the year at the minute, so we're very lucky to have a marketing team that are a bit more aligned, and we're very aligned with sales. So, you know, if we need content, they're great at creating content. We've got a fantastic branding team as part of that. They can give us assets that kind of elevate what you would call rookie content. So when a pre-sales person's put together and it might be their first video, actually they can finesse it to quite an extent. So it's got that authenticity, but it's still quite polished. It still feels nice. But learning all those hints and tricks, like, you know, just some soft backing music when the video's right, the duration of the video, the supporting documentation that goes with it, all those kind of things, that's a skill we had to learn, because we were used to sitting in a room normally with people, looking in the whites of the eyes like we are now, and reading off their body language and demonstrating and feeling what landed. And I could tell by your reaction, do I keep going with this? Is this interest? I could ask you the question, Kevin, is this interesting to you? Should I keep going? Is this? And we could almost do discovery as we were doing demonstrations. That's shifted. That's shifted to people saying, show me what best looks like.
We're in a data world now. Done all of these great things, and I can, you know, anybody listening is going to say, blimey, Adam's enthusiastic about the access group. He speaks highly of sales, he speaks highly of marketing. If anything, you might get some job applications come from this.
Always looking for good people.
But going back to the sort of data side, you know, you've been evolving in recent years, driven by the pandemic, the market needs. Are you starting to get crunched data to create analytics are saying, we can see we're doing the right thing. We can see things that we might need to improve. Are you at that level of information yet?
Yeah. So, I mean, you ask me anything, I can tell you my top 20, 30 pieces of content, how often they're used, where there's gaps in their usage. So I know if it's working for a certain salesperson, why is salesperson B not using that content? And is there a particular reason? They might serve a different market. Therefore, we need to tailor that content more and republish. So we're very acute at understanding not only where it's getting used, but what the impact of that content is. And I am not just talking videos here. You know, a lot of people think, if I get a video platform, that's it. You know, it's done. That's not buyer enablement. Okay. Putting videos in place just helps you scale.
It helps. But it's a piece of a jigsaw.
It's got to be a mindset. It's got to be everyone's got to buy into a shift. Yeah. And I would say the customers included, you know, some markets are not ready for this. Some markets don't want to buy this way. You look at some of the very, very heavy regulated industries. Some of them don't want to do this because the ramifications of making a wrong decision, they will always buy how they've probably always bought. And so I think buyer enablement, we need to also be cognizant. Sometimes we don't need to change. That is how the buyer wants to buy. You know, too much change can actually bring about the opposite of what you're trying to achieve.
Mm.
Sometimes enabling the buyer is to sell how you've always sold. That's okay. But you've just got to be cognizant of how your buyer is shifting, you know, and how their attitudes to buying are changing.
Well, that's the thing. It's not the latest shiny toy. I think one of the problems that I see a lot is that when I speak to people almost on a daily basis, and I understand, do you truly understand how your customers are buying? Do you truly understand what they're doing internally in their decision process? Have you ever mapped out how they bought from you in the past or how they made a decision? Largely, a lot of it's guesswork or hearsay. It's never been formalized. And I don't like to leave it to salespeople to piece that together. And I always think a pre-sales person or a project manager can piece that thing together because they've got a different mindset than us salespeople.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't truly understand how people are trying to buy and the hurdles they hit, the bottlenecks they hit, what they find easy to access, what information they couldn't find that would have helped them, then you're never going to know how you can evolve. And did you guys do a bunch of digging around, or did you sort of accumulate a lot of information over a period of time that sort of led to that aha moment, we got to move forward with this buyer enablement?
Yeah, I spoke to customers. Like the most simple thing in the world. I asked a customer, what did they think? You know, and I asked myself the question, would I buy from us the way we sell?
Mm.
If the answer was no, I changed it, right? I'm a qualified accountant by trade. That's my background. So do you know what? I looked at how we sold finance software and I thought, well, would I do that? I know plenty of accountants my age. I know plenty of decision makers. Got a great relationship with a lot of our customers. So I asked them, I said, listen, if we did this, would it make your life easier? Yes or no? And if it was no, we didn't do it. If it was yes, we went ahead.
Mm. Why the change of career then? Was accountancy too thrilling for you?
It was too thrilling. Yeah, it was absolutely. It was just too much. Living on the edge.
Yeah. Forget SAS, accountancy. I'm glad you moved into the role you did because it sounds like you're incredibly infused by it. You're doing a great job in terms of driving that sort of mindset internally. So if you had to give any takeaways you can share with anyone listening to the site today that sort of justifies, I suppose, the need to start thinking about buyer enablement now from your learnings, what is it that people should take as a first step?
I think absolutely, most definitely, get your teams aligned. You know, get that vision. And are we all on the same page? Because I think one area of the business charging ahead without the others is not going to achieve what you want it to. That's my absolute golden.
Right?
I do think of it. And I would say, actually, you made a very good point when you were speaking mid-sentence. I meant to pick up on it earlier, and I will now. The pre-sales team have a very different view of the world from a lot of the organization. And I would tap into that. If you're listening to this and you're in a sales enablement role, tap into it. They can be a fantastic source of content. They're very, very capable. The community, the pre-sales community, is growing in stature. Huge amount of open vacancies. But what there is a mass amount of knowledge there. And I think tapping into that knowledge and aligning it with where you want to take your sales and buyer enablement processes is key, because they could just be your best content creators and you don't know it.
Well, in the past, I've found some of the pre-sales people to be inadvertently the best salespeople we had, because when they spoke, customers listened because they knew they weren't getting anything contrived or biased. They were getting an honest assessment, honest answer, honest opinion.
What do they get joy from, Kevin? You think about it. You think about a great pre-sales, but what do they get joy from?
Never been one. Tell me.
So it's fulfilling a customer and giving them the solution, that picture, that vision that a customer has in their head of how they think they're going to work. When a pre-sales person can either put that together or reimagine what that looks like and deliver it, that's what the majority of pre-sales people
makes sense
want to achieve, right?
Salesperson thinking commission check. Pre-sales person. Okay, it's half. No, I'm a salesperson. So, but I think I'm half and half. I'm high.
That's why a great sales and pre-sales person, that partnership.
Yeah, combination.
There's nothing. We've spoken about this previously, you know, off the show. That partnership. Yeah. If that's on fire, there is nothing like that.
I value pre-sales people. You know, the best pre-sales people are the ones I've built relationships with. Mm. I looked after them. I socialized with, because then they were, you know, my buddy, my ally that can help me to succeed. And that was back in the day. It's even more important now. Look, I think it's fabulous you come on to share experience. And I'm delighted that I'm seeing buyer enablement in titles.
Mm.
I was sort of surprised and also delighted to understand about what Byron Edelman is at the Access Group, that it is pre-sales, it is bid management, it is academies, it's, you know, this cohesive approach to change, you know, to be more buyer-centric. So are you happy for people to reach out on LinkedIn?
100%. I'm always open to networking. I used to spend traveling pretty much networking. So feel free to be part of that. Love to do that. I'm assuming you'll share my kind of LinkedIn details for people who aren't familiar. So,
and the fact is, you've heard how Adam has spoke so enthusiastically about the Access Group. It's growing. Adam may even have a job. So if you're
a
manager, salesperson, get in touch with Adam, because those guys are going crazy in their performance. So anyway, thanks for coming on, Adam. Thanks for sharing your learnings and wisdom. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me. Cheers, Kevin.